made it. Part 3 of episode 300, and you will be rewarded. The next guest begged me to be on episode 300. He said, if you're going to be doing an episode 300, I got to be on that, because he has been on Turned Out of Punk not once, not twice, not three times, but this will make it 4 times, and every time it is a pleasure. I am talking about my hero, my friend, one J. Maskus of the greats, Dinosaur Jr., of Deep Wound, of et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, of Turned Out of Punk fame. Anytime he comes on this show, you know it's going to be memorable. And anytime I can punish this guy, you know I'm going to take that opportunity and just make it as awkward as possible. So here's J. Maskus on Turned Out a Punk. I love you, Jay.
It's over?
Yeah, when it's over. If you decide to hang up on me, I'll call you back.
Okay.
Say thanks. That's if you hang up. Jay, thank you for coming back on the show.
Thank you.
You've been on the show now 4 times.
But who's counting?
I am. I am definitely counting every single time.
Well, 4 out of 300, that's not a very good ratio.
That puts you in like a rarefied air, though. You're part of the 4 club. There's nice. Like yourself, John Worster, professional wrestler MVP, Zach Blair from GWAR, and J. Maskus.
We should start a band.
I think that would be the best band ever. I think that is that's my new favorite band. But Jay, I wanted you to come back on here because very early on I interviewed you, and I remember at the time I just didn't do a very good job on that interview. There's a lot more for us to uncover. It was before a show too. You had to run off and play a show that night.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe planning is not your strong suit. I don't know.
No, planning is definitely never my strong suit. Hence why we're doing this on the fly right now. One thing I didn't want, I don't think I talked to you about this last time, is how did you meet Gigi Allin?
I just met him at practice. Gerard got me in the band. It's like, oh, you want to play with Gigi Allin? I was like, it seemed like a good idea at the time, you know, but.
Had you seen him live?
Seemed like a punk thing. I hadn't seen him live, no.
So what was your, you hadn't seen videotape even? Was there videotape even floating around back then?
I don't know.
Because there are those tapes, but I guess, you know, had you heard like stories of what this show was going to be like? Like, were you, and what I'm getting at is, were you prepared?
I don't think you can be prepared, you know, it's one of those things. You really can't be prepared for it. Because when it's happening, you're like, holy shit, this is... You know, he really was a different guy on stage. He seemed like fine when we practiced and stuff. He was very personable. But then I took a look at him and he's coming on stage and he was like, you know, he was a different person. His eyes were just glassed over. He's like, you know, like he wasn't even there. And, you know, he takes a Shure 58 mic and starts jamming it up his ass and shitting on the stage, and people are immediately throwing bottles at him, so he's bleeding from the chest and shitting blood on the stage, and I'm like, whoa, this is not good. I moved as far away from him as possible on the edge of the stage. And yeah, I don't know.
It's so weird that he had developed that cult that quickly, you know, like, I guess it was like an 8-year span or something, but like still, like, for there to be an audience that's not only willing to like sit through a show, but like that into it, that they want to participate in the events.
Well, I remember, you know, a lot of my friends were at the show and stuff from around New York. And as soon as he started, they see how real it is with the, everyone is pinned to the back of the wall of the club. There's like tons of space out in front. Everyone's just like pinned to the back wall. They were just like, did not want to get near them, except a couple of girls.
I've had like a few people on the show in the last few years that have had, you know, various kinds of run-ins with Gigi Allin. And you know, like encounters and things like that. It just always comes back to the fact that like no one is prepared. Like no yeah. one was adequately prepared for the situation.
Yeah. It's just like, you think you're into punk rock, but are you really?
Yeah. What's your definition of this genre? Cause it's about to go out the fucking window with this show.
What?
Whatever your definition of punk rock is, it's going to go out the window after this show.
Is it? I don't know.
Did you, who else was in the band with you? Gerard's in the band, right? He plays bass.
No, Gerard played guitar also. And, Kramer played bass, and I don't remember the drummer's name.
Wayne Kramer?
No, Kramer from Bongwater. And...
Oh yeah, of course. Of course. Cause Wayne Kramer also did a lineup with him too.
Oh wow.
It's amazing when you think about G.G. Allin. Here he is playing with, you know, D.D. Ramone, Wayne Kramer, yourself. Did Thurston do something with him or no?
I have no idea. I doubt it.
Okay, well, like, anyway, Gerard, like, he played with, like, a lot of, you know, heavy hitters within music. And it's good to know that G.G. could reach for the stars like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he was a good, you know, he had potential. It's just he, I don't know, he's a bit too shocking, I guess.
Well, it's weird to think of, like, what would have happened if he had gotten to the era where we had, you know, Marilyn Manson and a lot more artists that were known for being shocking. Like, if he had gotten to the nu metal era, would there have been, like, a G.G. Allin mainstream crossover? Not that anyone wants that, but would it have happened?
I don't think so. I mean, he's a bit too real for that type of thing.
After he died, like, people come on the show and talk about the fact that, like, the Murder Junkies just didn't go away, obviously, and that they just became kind of this gang without a leader terrorizing the Lower East Side of New York. And we've had, you know, I think you know Simon Doom. I don't know if you know that dude. But he was terrorized by the Murder Junkies gang growing up.
Why? What did they do?
They got his 13-year-old. He was 14 at the time, and they got his 13-year-old girlfriend hooked on heroin. They also like used to rob him, and one time like surrounded him at a show. Like they were just. It just seems like the blight of the scene.
I guess you know, they just could smell their victims.
Well, it's like any great army, I guess, after the leader goes away. You know, these soldiers aren't done fighting. They gotta keep throwing the shit somehow. And apparently they would play shows after G.G. died with a different lead singer and a separate guy whose only job was to do all the fucked up shit that G.G. used to do on stage.
Yeah, you'd need at least two people to fill his shoes, I'm sure.
Yeah, you need like that mighty, mighty boss tone of debauchery. This is the song.
How do you retain all this information in your head?
Because I just didn't put anything useful in there, Jay. Just started filling it with this crap.
Somebody, yeah, I'm glad you're doing it.
Well, I you know what? Someone's got to do it. Someone's got to keep track of what G.G. Allin was up to at various stages of his life. One thing I also definitely had to talk to you about is our mutual love of the greatest Canadian export franchise, I guess, at this point. And I'm not talking about Drake. I'm talking about the Degrassi.
Yeah.
When did you remember first seeing the show?
I have no idea. Like, whenever, a long time ago. When did it start airing?
Well, because there's the kids of Degrassi, which is like when they're all elementary school kids. And the storylines.
No, it wasn't that.
Okay, it wasn't that. So that, because I think that one goes back to like 81 or something. But I think Degrassi Junior High, it must be 86, right? 80, 85, 86? Must be. Jay?
I don't know what happened.
Okay, I thought that was when you were sick of the conversation. You just
I could out. Hear you in your desperation, but you couldn't hear me.
No, you couldn't. Did you hear me cry?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I was hoping I hung up before that, but okay. No, we were talking about, it must be 84, no, sorry, 85, 86, I think that it starts airing. But they didn't show in your schools there, right?
No. Just on TV.
We had it shown in schools up here.
Really? Like, weren't you doing math or anything?
No, like in sex ed class. Like, I remember we saw the Spike Gets Pregnant episode. I think in drug awareness class, we saw the episode where Shane did Spike's.
We didn't have sex ed or drug awareness.
You didn't have drug. Didn't I guess you would have DARE coming into the schools, right? I guess no. That would have been later, maybe.
Yeah, there was none of that when I was at school. You learn that stuff from the streets.
Exactly. Learn by experience. It was like mandatory viewing. You had to watch the AIDS episode. You had to watch, you know, a lot of the key episodes. But it'd be out of sequence too. So then you'd feel like, oh shit, I gotta go home and watch the rest of it to catch back up with where we are.
Yeah, I didn't realize how many years of it there are, because in quarantine I started watching the latest one. Then I went back to the whatever the other one with Drake on it is, and then that one just keeps going and going and going. I haven't even gotten to the end of it.
No, it's weirdly like, I don't know, it's almost like a public service in Canada that this thing, you know, like, because there's always like a new generation of kids.
Yeah.
And then they'll just swap out the kids on the TV show. They did stop it for a while, like after School's Out. You saw that. You must have seen that movie, right?
No.
You've never seen School's Out? Oh, no. I got to find the link to it and send it to you. That's the wrap up movie from junior high. And like, shit goes bad, wow. Jay. They wrap up some storylines. They wrap up some characters and, yeah.
But Snake is a consistent through the whole thing, pretty much, right?
Yeah, Snake. Well, the when they first brought back the new generation or the next generation, they brought back a lot, right? Like Spike's on that. Yeah.
Joey Jeremiah.
Yeah, Joey's on it. They replaced Shane, the actor who played Shane, Spike's, the guy who had the baby with Spike. They replaced him with Jono from Trailer Park Boys. Jonathan Torrance. Did you like that show?
I don't remember. I've only seen it a couple times.
Yeah, you're much better off watching, you know, like Kids in the Hall or something. I think that's a little more, you know, good Canadian TV.
Yeah.
As opposed to the bad stuff. Well, like, what are some of your favorite storylines from the new one?
The new one? Well, of course, when Drake got shot, that was awesome.
That's a wild episode.
Yeah.
A wild story arc. I thought the one, did you get to the part where there's a stabbing that happens? I think it's four seasons later.
I must have. A stabbing. Who got stabbed?
That really kind of lovable, cute kid, but he's a little bit older.
Oh, yeah. That's so random.
It's so random. I remember
what. It's like, what is, what? You're just like, I don't know. That was a bit much. Yeah.
Did you watch 90210 when it came out?
Yeah, I watched it. I wasn't that into it.
Yeah, no, I couldn't get into it either. It just felt like, felt so unreal compared to like Degrassi. Yeah.
So, Cali.
You had a song on Melrose Place soundtrack, though.
That's true. I did like Melrose Place better. That was like, more my speed.
I like those early crossover episodes where Kelly was going out with the bartender. You're like, isn't she supposed to be 17? And this bartender's got to be like in his late 30s.
Nice.
Well, Jay, I want to say, man, I really thank you for coming back on this bad boy. And you know that this thing is a party every time you're here. And I long for the day that we can reconnect. And I can.
I've been really missing Toronto, though, watching all this Degrassi. I'm like, damn, I want to hang out in Toronto.
We've never done like a Degrassi walk tour, eh?
I think you showed me a few things. Yeah.
I showed you Degrassi Street right by the Opera House where they filmed it. Didn't I show you that?
It sounds familiar.
Okay. Yeah. Well, next time you come to Toronto, when this thing's all over, we're going to go to, the fake Toronto that they film it at now.
Wouldn't it be great if your kids went to Degrassi?
It'd be a long trek. I think I live like an hour on transit to get there.
But it's not in Toronto, or is Toronto that big?
And Toronto's that big. Yeah. It's like way at the, like I'm kind of in the northwest part of the city. Yeah. And Degrassi is the southeast part of the city.
Well, you could move.
I could move, but those, that neighborhood's way too expensive now.
Oh, really?
Like I'm pretty much trapped in the house I'm in now. Like everywhere in
Toronto's a little too expensive. Aren't we all?
Yep. Yeah. Well, I got to come visit you.
Yeah, really?
I've wanted to see your record collection forever.
Yeah, what happened?
I don't know. Well, I'm just waiting for the invite. You know, come down. We can.
Have you guys played anywhere near here?
Like New York and Boston. That's kind of close-ish, right?
Yeah.
What about Providence? That's not close.
It's the same as Boston.
Damn, you must be like right in the middle of all these places.
Well, not too close. We're like 2 hours from everywhere and 3 hours from New York.
Yeah, it's a long haul. You know, I'm always like, oh, we should just go out and visit Jay one time when I'm on tour, but it'd be a bit of a trek.
Yeah, you could drive from Toronto at maybe 9 hours or something. I don't know.
I'd have to learn how to drive.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
What do you make the wife drive around?
I don't make anyone do anything. We could all take the subway together. We both didn't drive with the first child. And then after the first child, Lauren was like, fuck this. I'm learning to drive and getting a car. And, you know, I think the world's safer without me behind the wheel. But she did let me put a bumper sticker on the car recently. So I kind of feel like I'm driving a little bit.
What is the bumper sticker?
An Iron Age bumper sticker. It says, keep honking. I'm listening to Iron Age.
That's pretty random.
I'll give you one. I got an extra one right here. I should send you a little care package. I also made Damien Lego figures.
Does she like your DJing?
Yeah, I think she likes it. You know, the kids don't like it. The kids fucking hate it. And they want to listen to Old Town Road, like all the different versions of Old Town Road from start to finish every time we're in the car.
Where did you go wrong?
Well, I don't know. Like you can't force your kid to like the stuff you like, right?
Although a lot of people try.
A lot of people try.
Curate their children's taste.
And it ends up, I think they're ultimately going to wind up kind of hating you if you did that, right?
Yeah, or become mass murderers or something.
Or become worse, yeah. It's just not a, it's a no-win situation. You know, every time I'm in the car and I'm like, let's listen to the Flaming Groovies. They're like, no, like, why would we want to listen to that? That's like 1,000 years old.
Did you watch that Stiff movie that's on Amazon now?
No, I have it on my
tour movie.
No, is it? It's a documentary, right? From the 80s, the Stiff documentary.
Yeah, or 79 tour or something. Pretty awesome.
I gotta watch it. There's like some really good documentaries on Amazon. I think had it or something. Yeah. I saw the L7 documentary.
I watched that too.
Yeah. There's like a lot of great music documentaries. I want to see that Stano Jr. documentary.
I know it's done.
I know. I'm waiting for it, Jay. I want to see. Yeah. I want to see what made the cut. I think I was there for two of the shows that were filmed during the process of making it. So
God, there's so much footage. I don't know how we even edited it.
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Oh man, yeah. So it's coming out soon ish.
I don't know. With the COVID, it's hard to say.
Yeah, everything changed.
I know it's going to be on German TV like 2022 or something. That's all I know.
Man, when that happens, you got to come back on and promote it with me.
Has Nick Lowe been on your show?
No, but Johnny Marr was on the show and told this great story about winning some NME songwriting contest when he was a little kid and recording at Nick Lowe's house, but Nick Lowe wasn't there. And then Nick Lowe came back from a Rock Pile tour and he just sees these boots walking up the stairs as they're recording kind of in the lower level of the house. And then they hear like a huge crash. Like he had gone to like faceplant on the bed and missed the bed and just landed on the floor or something.
Did they record it?
No, unfortunately, I don't think they got it recorded for posterity.
It's such an awesome band when Larry Wallace is singing Police Car and Nick Lowe's on bass and then Dave Edmonds is on drums and the Rock Pile drummer is also on drums.
On the Nick Lowe awesome. Stuff?
On that Stiff movie.
Oh, the Stiff movie, yeah. Because well, it's him touring like the first record, I guess, like the first solo album. And is Ian Dury in it too?
Yeah.
And
Reckless Eric.
Well, that's a pretty sick lineup. I love those Reckless Eric records.
Yeah, I was impressed with that. And they sound pretty cool, like when they're playing Heart of the City. Dave Edmund sounds a lot more distorted than usual and kind of like, I guess, punking it up for the crowd, but it sounds awesome.
That's like Dr. Feelgood on their records. You know, I like them fine, but then there's that live DVD that came in a couple of years ago where they're just like unbelievable. Like it sounds way more punk than it sounds on the record.
Yeah, they just couldn't capture the energy.
No, not at all. And actually, speaking of the Stiff documentary, you heard Reckless Eric had COVID at the beginning of this thing.
But he survived?
I think so. I hope so. I'm going to fact check that and put it in the intro. Pretty sure. No, he's definitely still alive. Yeah, I'm looking at it now. Still there.
Nice.
Well, Jay, I'm not going to keep you anymore, man. Anytime you want to come back on this show, which I'm sure will probably be the next time I force you to come back on this show, please know
All right. The
door is always open.
All right. I'll be there.
Not to be this person, but it's like, as you guys know, I am very persistent in talking about ADHD and like how that affects people and different personality disorders and stuff. And like, I don't think all beef stories have to do with that, but I think that often like forms of mania can be part of that because unfortunately in the arts, like it's bewitching, you know, to see someone talented who is also like doing the Kanye thing, like, and just going. And so I think that is, and then you get enabled in it, you know, you get like validation on a level that like no private citizen gets when they are like this, you know, and I think that's a big fuel for especially the hardcore beefs, which I'd almost like to get more into because that's like a whole other type of beef, I find, you know, like that's rarely that's sophisticated, like combination of like you were talking about off mic, like Steve Albini sellout stuff. I mean, someone told me once, I remember very distinctly, and I don't know if I've told you this, Damien, but I probably have said it on your podcast even, but when you guys signed to J-Tree, when Fucked Up signed to J-Tree, someone was like, oh yeah, it's over, they've sold out.
We talked about Ian Dixon.
No,
Dixon famously, that's why we wrote David Comes to Life. Originally, it was called Ian Comes to Life.
Yeah.
About the fact that he was like, oh, he told me he felt his heart break when he heard that we signed it to J-Tree.
Yeah, no, it was Yannick from Tragedy. Union of Uranus. Yeah. And, you know, that's just like an example of like the sort of principle, the idea that it's a principled anger. You know, I think has a lot more in hardcore, you know, like that guy punching Danzig in the face or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Remember that? Like, I feel like that was like one of the first kind of virally music things I remember seeing, like a subcultural music things.
Yeah.
And like there's kind of no excuse to that, but didn't he have reasoning behind that? Like he was like, oh, you guys like did something, like you moved our gear.
No, they weren't gonna let
move the set times, right?
Well, no, they showed up and they were supposed to be the opener on the show, and then they got told they had to wait till after his set to play.
That's fucking stupid.
And then they started getting and there were still people obviously that showed up to see him because, like, you know, like especially at that time. Like when Slayer would show up and they would have Sick of It All playing with them, or I think I saw Dropkick Murphys and Motorhead maybe. Or
yeah.
Something.
Yeah. I remember that show.
Something weird like that. But these bands would have a draw all of their own, you know? Mm-hmm. And so they still had some people there that were seeing them. The band was North Side of Kings.
Yeah.
and they had people there to see him. And Danzig's crew kind of proceeded to kind of tear down after his set. So they couldn't play. And so this guy confronted Danzig in the middle of a signing about it. And then, of course, it just escalates from there. You can see on the video. And he wrote a really interesting article that guy wrote, I forget his name, but he wrote about the experience and how much it affected his life kind of in the wake of it. And like, you know, constantly having to deal with angry Danzig fans coming after him and things like that. And I don't know if he could go back in time if you do it again, but it certainly is a situation where I could feel that frustration being in a fucking young band, getting a show like that, especially from someone who used to be involved in punk rock and not kind of being met with some sort of like empathy for your situation. I'd be lying if I said I didn't understand why this guy would want to fucking confront.
I understand it too. And I don't know if that's like a perfect example of that, but I just think that type of, you know, response, like not being afraid to sort of confront somebody like that in that way, it's just to me like a certain hardcore kind of thing, you know. It'd be like, you know, like that band Denko was talking about. It's not like you would have gone to their merch table and yelled at them after, you know, having this experience with them.
Which band are you talking about?
I'm talking about the band that you didn't want to name that you had the experience.
Oh, God. It's just embarrassing that to name them. I mean,
you should not.
Just let us drop that band.
We're letting it drop.
But it was nothing. It's just,
I know. Yeah. Now it's going to be, now it's like the big whole crux of this sort of the
year. I know. I just, you know, like the Robin Black thing was real. Like we didn't like each other. There's members, maybe not Robin, but there's members in his band that didn't like us, and we didn't like members in his band. And, you know, he's got his name on the marquee and my name's on the marquee. So we're going at it. I actually, after one of the spats we had when we played a show together, I saw Robin at a party and he came up to me. He was the bigger man. He came up to me and he was like, trying to be nice and trying to like cool the waters. And my response to him was, why are you not addressing the elephant in the room? Fuck your, like, not him, not Robin, but like, fuck that guy in your band.
Right.
And so, you know, I was unable to, you know, let it go. And so, yeah, it's a problem. But then again, like I said before, and you mentioned it too, Nick, it was, sometimes I felt it was the fuel to, you know, the fire that I needed to get on stage night after night. And even the guys in the band, like they joke around sometimes when we're backstage going, do you know what so-and-so said to you about you? You know, like this guy I was passing by just outside and he said like, fuck that band, let's go. And then it was just like, you know, just to amp me up.
Did I tell you guys the Gord Downie thing that he told me? Where it's like being a lead singer in a band, you wear it differently. You know, like you're going to be, you know, and especially I imagine if your name's on the marquee, and not that my name was ever on the marquee, but, or Nick, your name was ever on the marquee, but we were also the type of front people where it became like, oh, this is their band, you know?
On some level. I mean, you know, I think both of our bands,
I mean that in so far as like not in the actual internal mechanics of the band,
but the voice of the band,
but also just like the magnet for people's ire that the band can draw too. Like you become that thing, and it turns you into something different, you know, no matter what you try and do. It's just like your experience of being in the band. And Gord maybe, you know, said to me, like, you're going to experience it differently being the lead singer of a band than anyone else in your band's going to experience, because you have to deal with everything that comes along with being the front person of a band.
Right.
And that's also the bad of being the front person of the band, which is also becoming the kind of like target of the band.
Yeah.
But there was one time an old drummer of ours in our band, we've had many, but one of the drummers in our band at the time, I was in the van and I was so angry at what this writer had written about me. And I was just going off on this writer. And he said, why don't you just let it go? It's not a big deal. It's just a, it's just one article and it's just one city. Who cares? And then one person in a message forum on a chat board or a message board said something about him and he flew into a rage. Yeah. And that's the difference. You know, as the singer or the front person, you get it constantly.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, and you get it differently too. Like, you know, like, you know, it's not saying my experience on being a front person is the same as yours and the kind of shit people throw at me is the same sort of thing. But like the amount of time I was just people like brought up me being fat and like, granted, I was taking off my shirt and I was kind of celebrating my size, yeah. But it was like every fucking comment where it was like the fat singer, or, you know, like there's a drawing of me in the New Yorker and I'm just a blob with eyes.
That's horrible.
Yeah. And it's like, it's, you know, and I like, and you know, and I, you know, I think I owned it enough that it became my thing, but at the same time, it was like, fuck, this sucks having to deal with it. It's like being in high school again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's, I mean, that's the irony out of all of this stuff is all these, half these bands are people who fucking hated high school. And then you get into a situation where you can reconfigure the social hierarchy and you fucking like wind up making it like high school again. You see that on every level of social media now. And it's so masochistic, you know, like we're in a society right now where we are literally like being fed glass. Well, we're not literally being fed glass. I don't know why I had to throw literally in there.
Yeah. That was, got real heavy there. What do you know about our food, Nick? What YouTube video have you watched? Tell me, send me the link, please, in the chat.
I mean, if you've ever had some of the gum chews, then you actually have literally been fed glass. That's a shout out to my chewers out there.
And we remember get sued chews? By chews on the 300th episode.
But because it's happening on a large scale. And that's just like another aspect, not to get all 300 episodes into you, that's so interesting with punk rock, from the politics to sometimes the aesthetics to the music itself, is just like how much elements of it are like fully mainstream now, you know, and or at least like a more visible politics than ever, like the politics of Who's Emma, you know, are a microcosm of like a certain element of the last 4 years in terms of like the culture war, quote unquote, and cancel culture, quote unquote, and, you know, Bernie Sanders, quote unquote. And if you're listening and you're like, what's Who's Emma, it's like, I'm sure there's a bunch of essays written about it on the
I think they're more thinking, what's this guy talking about at this point?
Oh, did I go too deep?
I think I know what you're saying.
No, but I'm just saying that you know, the whole thing is, and I think that sort of like principled beef criticism thing, which a lot of that you can probably trace to, say, a song like Get Off the Air by Angry Simones. One of the first like punk diss songs, if we're going to put it that way.
I wonder what would be the very first diss song. I'm sure there's like some sort, isn't there like a Sex Pistols diss song on EMI, definitely the diss on EMI.
I love that song.
I'm trying to think of the Stooges or the MC5 had any diss songs. I guess I'm Straight is kind of like a diss song by the Modern Lovers, right? Like on Hippie Johnny, who would later become the guy from the Real Kids. I wonder if the Real Kids were going, I guess they weren't, because he must have been in some band. That's kind of a diss song. It's like a straightish diss song, even.
This is like a really interesting topic, like, you know, the origins of like punk beef songs. I'm sure they you're right, it started very early.
Yeah. Well, it goes back in rock and roll. Have you watched the documentary Beef, right? They talk about how like there, it goes back to like classical music.
By QD3?
By QD3, yep.
The hip hop documentary Beef. I mean, I haven't seen it for a really long time, but
there's several of them, aren't there?
There's a TV series even afterwards. Oh. Yeah, there's a, but I, there's a, I think four, maybe five movies. And then they did, I know a BET did a TV series for, I think, one season. Mm-hmm. I love those movies. I think those movies are fantastic. Like the structure of them, you know, maybe there are toxic results of a film like that, you know, that is undeniable, but just as in a vacuum with no consequences, like we had in the early 90s with a lot of privilege acknowledged at that point. But I love those movies back then.
Yeah. The beef thing when it comes to hip hop is also very interesting. You know, it's very respect based, you know, and it's a lot of the time you're seeing someone's like neighborhood, you know, and the politics of their neighborhood, like, are the reason for like a high profile, you know, like conflict.
Well, I got all my cues from hip hop beefs.
Yeah, probably the same.
When I got into a band that, you know, was doing something. I'm just thinking like, I want to state is that I don't want to have any more beefs. But then I think back on some of the bands or some of the musicians or some of the people in the music biz who have gone over beyond disrespecting us, and I just can't shake it.
Well, it's hard to, you know.
I'm willing to shake Robin, but Robin Black, but that's fine. But there's other ones. Like there's other ones, and I just can't shake it. I cannot shake it.
Most of my beefs in retrospect were with people that I really probably shouldn't have beef with. Mm-hmm. You know, in most cases I've kind of found them to be really nice people in the end, or, you know, even when they weren't necessarily nice people, there's no reason for me to have a beef with them. You know, I found even times I've talked shit on the internet in general. I've just been like, why did I do that? Like it's never kind of, same. You know, but a lot of times that's just born out of like, you know, my own insecurities of that
point. Well, also, I, you know, the problem is if you have something funny, because like, again, I kind of try to be funny all the time, right? And so, you know, if you have something funny that uses someone who doesn't really deserve it as the butt of the joke, like a lot of time I'll still do it because I just feel like I'm not doing it from a place of dislike. I made a joke about Dave Grohl on Twitter where I was like, I mean, you know, it's like, you know, can I tell you the joke?
Is it going to be something I have to edit out?
You tell me, I'll tell you and then you can.
Well, I guess I'll know after I hear it.
Yeah, I said the best Nirvana cover was when they threw a blanket over Dave Grohl's acoustic guitar.
I might just edit out for your own benefit on that one.
I like that, Jeff. That's really funny. And because he couldn't, or like the best Nirvana cover was like when they hid his guitar. Dave Grohl's guitar. And I thought it was,
wait, just, why is Nirvana doing a cover? Like, you mean when they cover Vaseline's?
No, it's a wordplay. You see, they're covering up the guitar. It's not a song.
I don't know. I think Dave still got you on that one.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, I'm just like, okay, well, everybody knows that Dave Grohl has had a career. People liked that song Marigold. So I think it's just funny to do this joke. But then, you know, you can't please everybody, and you
know,
are too scared. You both want to go on.
No, I don't think it comes out of fear at this point. I was like, is this going to be a joke that's really funny that I have to pretend not to be funny politically? But I think on this one, I can honestly say I didn't
laugh. I'll share the tweet with you. You'll like it. But
I don't know if I will like it on social media.
I don't know, man. You know, I get a lot of flack for my sense of humor, but I got a lot of emails telling me how much they love what I'm doing. And I'm not going to say I have an email from Dave Grohl giving me props about the joke, but telling me to tell it on podcasts. And I'm not going to say I have that email, but I'm not going to not
say. He has turned down this podcast I know him in real life, you know, and he has turned down this podcast before. So I'm not protecting myself politically when I tell you this, Nick, but I don't know if I'm going to like that joke on Twitter.
I'm going to tell you something else.
I love you, Nick, too. I didn't mean that to be disrespectful on that one, because I do love you.
We don't want to start beef, do we?
No, I don't want to start a beef with you. I don't want you reforming T-Greg Combo just to write, you know,
Damien song.
Damien, you know? Do dish.
Two words for Damien. Suck it.
Two words for Damien. You call me a poser for not liking wrestling back then. Where were you in 98 when wrestling was so fucking great?
Did you see?
I'm giving you lyrics here. Are you writing this shit down?
I put up, someone sent me a picture of, it was a Killer Elite show. And I'm wearing like the sickest WWF Attitude shirt. I'm wearing a New Age Outlaws down here t-shirt.
It was honestly so, now that I think about the Countdown to Oblivion comparison, seeing you in Killer Elite was the same sort of vibe. It was like, why is Nick in this band? Because you were so sick on stage with Killer Elite. But I was just like, oh, I wish this was Teen Crud. No, just on Killer Elite too, because I do love Killer Elite. Like, but I just hold Teen Crud in such high regard.
I like that. Now that's politics. Now that's needless politics.
I have the Killer Elite. I have two versions of the 7-inch sitting right beside
me. Wow, that's wild, man. That's cool.
I have the full color sleeve and the one that came in the silkscreen bag that cost me like $13 at Rotate back then. Bummer. Because I guarantee you that was the cost on it was fucking probably insane.
Well, you know, consignment is a dirty game. So wait, now we're at like hour three of our conversation.
At 2 o'clock, I got to interview the guy who was LC'd on True Blood, but I don't have anything till that.
I probably should go soon, but
we can do a part two, part three.
This is like episode 300 through 303.
This could be a whole. This could be definitely a whole month of content if we keep trying.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know.
This has been a lot of fun, guys. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having us. That's a very abrupt ending, but I get it.
Well, we don't have to go. Like I just wanted to give you, if you got some shit to do, you know, you're the one trying to get out of it. You're like, I got to go.
I'm just hunched over. I'm just hunched over a bed with, you know, I don't have like a proper space. And when we do these 9:30, 9 o'clock appointments, it's like, I'm not going to be in a great state, you know, right beforehand or have done very much useful. I don't have duties.
I tweeted today this morning at 6:30 in the morning, Nick.
I know. I bet you did.
I've been up.
You probably went to bed at six, slept 12 hours.
No, I went to bed at 11.
Oh yeah. You're one of these people who's like, I get 6 hours sleep every night. No.
Well,
six hours.
I wish I got more.
Rollins life. Henry Rollins life.
No. Yeah.
I wish I got more.
Yeah. I have it's amazing like touring and thinking of the fatigue, you know, and the sleep schedule and all of that stuff, you know, because it's been a while since I've been on like a proper tour. And I just remember in Brutal Nights, like the idea that, okay, so you're going to do the show. And in my case, unfortunately, you know, we were just like, 8 times out of 10, I'd be like drinking and, you know, carousing on to some extent. And then
make it sound like Motley Crue back then. What are you doing on these tours?
I mean, you know, like you have like, fun. You're bored. It's like, it's not like it's
fucked not up tour Crue. Is definitely we're bored, but I don't know if we settle it the same way.
Well, yeah, you guys hung on to your like the 15, you know, like just like being chill and kind of fighting and, you know, but like between like our personality dynamic was just that, like, it kind of is the singer thing where it's just, you know, someone might buy you a drink and like all this stuff. And cause we weren't like a hardcore band. We were like in the mix in between. So you'd get these like super Zeke fan guys, you know, who'd be like, mm-hmm. Your band's cool. Anti-Scene's cool. You're cool. You know? And then we'd get hate on the Terminal Boredom board, which I've never gotten over. Shout out to Terminal Boredom. I'm sure there's some Terminal Boredom adjacent listeners here.
I don't know anything what you're talking about.
I do, Nick. I get it, but I think it's awesome.
I feel like the Nine Shocks Terror has a connection to the Homo Stupids.
Yeah, it's the singer.
Yeah.
Lean Steve.
Yeah.
Just that was getting his AOL address, email address. Lean Steve something at AOL.com.
I'll tell you something. But yeah, like, so then you go up to your place to sleep. We, you know, floors and stuff in the US.
Are you actually describing this for me and Damien?
Well, no,
like, we've never experienced this.
And
or like, is this for the podcast?
Well, how do you guys like that? Like, and then you wake up at like, you know, 8, you start driving, you're just can't really fall asleep in there. And then you have to perform. Like, how did this become the norm? We should all be getting massages, teleported. Like, the first band should have just worked on inventing a teleporter, you know, while they were doing their music, so that we would.
Well, thanks for having us on, Damien. I mean, this has been great. I know Damien was trying to wrap it up like 10 minutes ago.
No, I only wanted to wrap it up because Nick's wanted to wrap it up, you know?
Oh.
Yeah, that's why I went on, you know, a little bit longer. Yeah, I wanted to change the topic to the touring.
But, no, I do get what you're saying. Like, it's like when you're on the long, lonesome highway east to Omaha and you can listen to the engine moaning one note song. And you think about that woman or that girl you knew the night before. The
night before.
For your thoughts be wandering.
Yeah,
like they always
the great Metallica.
You've been riding
song.
16 hours.
Yeah, exactly. And Ginger Lynn is hooking, you know. And then,
did you just say "Turn the Page" was by Metallica?
Yeah, it's the best Metallica songs are in order: "Whiskey in the Jar," "Jarro." What's the name of that? "Here I Am." Turn the Page. Here I Am, Turn the Page.
The Discharge cover.
Yeah, what's that one that they do? Everything on Kill 'Em All is a cover except for that one song.
What?
No, isn't there a cover on Kill 'Em All that's really amazing? One of their
Isn't there? There's two.
Yeah, what are they?
Blitzkrieg and Am I Evil?
Am I Evil's on Kill 'Em All? I don't remember that.
A reissue that I have, I guess.
Okay. So Blitzkrieg is one of their best originals. Am I Evil is one of their best originals. How long can I take this joke further?
I don't know. Like, I don't know. I don't know.
I'm in, though.
Are
you? You know,
yeah, okay. One
of the best DOA songs is Communication Breakdown.
Both those covers are not. I'm like sitting here thinking, like, I'm not the biggest Metallica fan. No, both those covers are only on the 1988 re-release of Kill 'Em All, not the original.
Yeah, that's the one I got.
Yeah, and they do the Diamond Head cover. And then
Diamond Head cover, yeah.
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 But that's an original by Metallica.
Oh, we're going back to the bit. Got it.
But yeah, I don't even know how we got.
I feel bad for you because we should be going yes and, Nick. You're ready. You're waiting for Danko and I to go yes and here we're giving you nothing.
I'll tell you, I do this stuff with comedians all the time, and I am never yes anding them properly. I'm always like stepping on them when they talk, and it's just, I don't understand my rhythm. It's bad. I should be thrown in a pit.
No, you shouldn't.
No, the mosh pit.
The mosh pit. You should. Yes, definitely. We should all get back to moshing one day.
I miss doing the door for the Not Dead Yet shows. That was fun. That saved my life in 2018, 2019. Return to punk.
Yeah, you came back in a big way.
I came back in a big way. You wanted to get in to watch Waxahachie? You got to get past me. You want to see Terror? Tough luck, buddy, unless you get $20. Pink, what was it? What was the name of that band? Limp Wrist. You want to see Limp Wrist? Sorry, sold out.
Sold out. Sold out. That show would be packed. You
know, yeah.
Did you do the door at Terror when they played the Rock Pile?
No, no. I only started doing the door for the shows in like 2018. So I did it as part of Not Dead Yet when they played. I think it was Terror. They played Hard Luck.
Part of Not Dead Yet? I don't know, maybe.
Yeah.
I realize now that having three kids means that I don't do any, like, my life is basically this podcast, you know, catching up on shit that I should have done 2 weeks ago.
Right.
And just like, you know, making lunches and making dinner.
That's nice. That's a decent life.
It's a decent life. It definitely is. I'm very happy with it right now, but it certainly is. I realize that I have not, I've not gotten out of the house much.
Yeah. I mean, I do have a, I am very thankful that I had those shows to see, got to see those shows. And like, you know, with the pandemic, there is a lot of things I'm really glad happened right before this, because it just would have been, you know, it's just sad to think that there's so many people who are just like not able to do stuff. It's sad to think that punk is paused.
Yeah.
You know,
no, it's also weird to watch like indie wrestling not be paused.
At the same time. You were talking about that. That yeah. wrestling thing is
it's very wild. Yeah. It's very bizarre to watch it happen, kind of unfold the twofold yeah. thing. But I definitely, yeah, like it is, you never regret going to a show, even the shows that suck. Ultimately, you do not regret going to those ones. Like some of my favorite shows were the shows that sucked. I think some of my favorite shows I've ever been to were some of the shows at the time where I'm like, this is the worst show I've ever been to. I can just look back on them now and I'm like, oh my God, I went to that. That's so wild. I saw some wild shit. Like I saw some really weird, wild bands over the years. I saw the Bacon Brothers. You saw
the Bacon Brothers.
I saw Broken Side. I saw
Broken Side.
I went to so much shit just that I was like, oh, this is, I'm not going to enjoy this. And then I went to the show and I'm like, oh, this is not my thing. But then afterwards I'm like, oh, I'm so glad I went to that.
Well, you know, this is a good reason for people to do The Door. And this is, if they can, effort for promoters, and also a good reason to be a music journalist. I hate to say it, but it's like, maybe it's like, there are all these bands. I've seen Mel C live, you know?
Not only does that job not exist anymore, Nick, that magazine does not exist anymore.
No, but you know, it is sad to think. And like, and then the last time I got assigned a review, it totally blew up in my face. It was just like something where I realized, wow, because of social media, like don't tag people when you review them. Like don't.
I remember Danzig banning Matt Wesley from coming to his show because he gave him a bad review of his new record in iMagazine. Which is wild to me. Like, could you imagine? I guess that was a different time, though, where you'd first thing you know, and I kind of toured towards the end of this. So I did experience a little bit, but where you roll into town and the first thing you do is pick up the weekly and, you know, see if your show's getting written up. Written up here, and then you're like, oh shit, we are, and then seeing what they write. So maybe that's how Danzig found out about it, but to me it was just so amazing. And I remember Matt Wesley then wrote an article for I about being banned from the Danzig show. But he was actually banned
for I mean, even that is such a stunt to pull that I almost like appreciate it, you know, like you're banned from a show, like that's hilarious, you know, like it's ridiculous, but it's at least you're not getting, you know, there's not going to be like 1,000, you know, like three, like a bunch of people being like, you suck, you know.
I prefer to stop the show in the middle and tell that person to get out in front of everyone.
Have you done that?
No. I've made people leave fucked up shows before, 100%.
Oh, really?
Oh, God, yeah. Like I remember one European tour where it happened like at least half a dozen times. But if you act like an asshole at a fucked up show, I will walk you out the door. Like personally, you know, I won't call security to do it. You know, if you're bigger than me, ultimately probably security will get involved, but I will walk you out, you know, and depending on what you do, I'll give you your money back. But if it's on some like real bullshit thing, no, you're not getting your money back, but get the fuck out. Like, no, I couldn't imagine getting to a point. Like, that's why I couldn't imagine playing a show with social distancing restrictions, like not having that kind of like, you know, kind of like not authority, but just having that kind of like interaction with the crowd where good and bad, you're able to kind of like get involved with stuff that's going on. And it's blown up in my face, right? Like one time we tried to make some people leave and they beat the shit out of me. Like,
what? When did that happen?
In Liverpool. Oh. I've told the story on the show before, I think a couple times, but I got stomped the fuck out during the middle of a festival.
When?
In Liverpool. 3 years ago now, 4 years ago.
Well, that's not long ago. What does it feel like? Was that the first time you'd been stomped
out? I'd been in fights before, you know, but I had never been gang attacked like that before that moment. But it was, we were playing the show. This fight kind of broke out in the crowd. I'm not even a fight. Like, I see this group of guys fucking with this couple in the crowd. So I hopped off stage and I went into the crowd and I was like, we're not playing for you. Get the fuck out of here. And they were like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And then so we started Human Wall. And this is like a big festival, right? But the Flaming Lips are playing on the main stage and we're playing on the sort of side stage, second stage of this type thing in Liverpool. And so they kind of get escorted out, you know, by me, us wall, human walling them out. And then one of these guys broke around our phalanx and, knocked the cup, punched the guy and the girl in the face, you know?
Ooh.
So I did all I knew what to do, which is to throw a spear, like, you know, WWE Edge style, you know? So I speared the guy into a security railing and the security railing came down and I just get on top of him. And I'm a big person. So I'm on top of him. At this point, another guy comes running over and kicks me. And so I'm trying to fight this dude. And then it's just like four or five other people. So I just cover up. I'm just kind of covered up for, I'd say it's about a good 2 minutes of them trying to stomp me out. Luckily I didn't lose consciousness. I think, and I had boot prints on my head and like, I was,
Jesus Christ.
Wow. If I had lost consciousness, I'm sure I would have been really fucked up, but you know, I didn't. And I, you know, we got up, we finished the set.
Jesus.
Went to the ambulance and, you know, got checked out.
Lads, cool it.
It was fucking gnarly. It was, you know, so it does blow up in your face sometimes, you know, but,
Yeah. I mean, that's cool. I mean, you know, it sucks, but you walk it like you talk it, I guess. You try to, you know, you police your own shows. That's interesting.
Yeah, and that's not to say that stuff I'm sure happens that I don't see, you know, because like you can't see everything, but at the same time, like I think that's like the thing you got to carry over from punk on a certain way, you know, on a certain level at least. You gotta
not be afraid. You've got the mic, you know, you have to say something.
Yeah, like exactly. Or you just gotta like, you know, like if people are going to be going, you know, crazy at a show, it's kind of like your job as the front person to kind of try to police that a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. To note what's going on. That's absolutely true.
I mean, there was one time I remember, especially we were opening and there was one guy in the crowd who just, I don't know what I did to him, but he just wanted to fight me. Mm. And I didn't know if it was a joke or not, but in the end I realized, no, this guy's serious because he had been wanting to fight me. And I'm like, oh, really? You want to fight me while we were playing? And then at the end, one of the security guards goes up to me and goes, if that guy comes anywhere near you, you know, we got your back. So that was, it never escalated. So.
Yeah,
that was about the closest it's ever gotten.
That's No, it definitely.
I don't think I ever had a proper brawl in our bands, but we were very silly, and I, you know, I don't think like mosh pits were necessarily safe at every show, but like most of the time, if I was addressing a crowd member, it's because they were doing like that thing they did to Rollins, like where they were just like slapping me or something, like while they were getting into the music, and I'm just like, what are you fucking doing, like. Like, do you understand that, like, liking a band and being into their music, even if you're dancing aggressively, doesn't mean you're, like, trying to stop the show by, like, punching the singer or, in a lot of cases, more than once, pouring a garbage can over the drummer, which happened not once but twice.
Yeah.
No, there was the show where it Horrible Fest in Cleveland at the Tower where they were like literally throwing firecrackers at us while we were performing, but like into the band.
We've had stuff thrown at us as well.
Sure. Yeah. I guess that's just.
There was one time. I can't remember half the stuff, but we were in Boston and we were opening and there's two guys who just kept yelling through the set and we suck and blah, blah, blah. And I was going through something very personal in my personal life, and I was going to take it out on them. And after the show, I jumped off stage. I didn't go backstage. I jumped off stage and I was ready to, I wanted to fight him. And JC yelled at me going, "What the fuck are you doing?" And yeah, it just kind of was like a slap in the face almost. And I turned around and I just walked backstage. And then after, I saw them outside of the club, behind the club in the alley. And I just went up to them and I go, "You two, what's your problem?" And they cowered, luckily. I mean, I didn't get stomped on like Damien, but they cowered. And I confronted them and I just said, why were you doing that? And so, yeah, that was almost a near fight. Yeah. It was about as, but fuck those guys, man. But I, you know, whatever.
That's on the record.
That's an 05.
I should go actually now.
Okay. All right. Well, guys, this has been amazing. Thank you both for coming on. And of course, I will plug both your respective podcasts.
You're the best. I also re-released my album. I'm here all week. My first album of comedy is out on Bandcamp. We put it out.
Yeah, I have a vinyl copy of it, Nick, where you signed it and then you scribbled over it. The cover is ruined. Oh, you ruined you ruined my cover of your album.
Well, I can get you another copy and I'll re-sign it and make it cleaner. But it's not just I'm here.
I heard stories about Jonathan Richmond doing that too, crossing his face off certain photos when you give him picture sleeves to sign.
But I re-released the album just on Bandcamp. But there is an extra track and I put a bunch of media on it too. And but the extra track is from 2020, March 3rd, 2020. So you can kind of hear my first album and then like a eight or 9 minute set from this year. So yeah, just something you can check out.
And check it out. You should shall. You shall, or you should, whatever. Check out Nick's comedy record. Also check out Nick Flanagan's podcast, and also check out Danko Jones' podcast and his amazing experimental noise record. I guess is the best way to describe it, but it's way more listenable than that would imply. Throat Funeral, which he put out this year, and also check out Danko Jones' band as well. If you've not checked out Danko Jones and the track Move On off their Garage Days record, you are missing out on one of the greatest Canadian punk songs ever. And Nick was in Tigre Combo, one of the best punk bands ever. And we got some more to come with that thing. We'll get that in a second. Okay, but the final guest here on episode 300 is someone who has been a driving force in this podcast since the very beginning, a key motivator for me, and a key sounding board for me as well. And that person is Chris O'Toole. Chris has hosted Footnotes. He is the co-host of Footnotes, I should say, since it began. And he will continue to co-host Footnotes until he gets sick of me. And you can hear Footnotes over there at patreon.com/turnedoutapunk. And it's just us dissecting these episodes. So what better way to end this off than by having Chris come on here and just dissecting Turned Out of Punk in general. All right, Chris, as I was just saying to you, this wouldn't be episode 300 without my man and everyone's friend, Chris O'Toole, as I like to say. Thank you, Chris, for coming on. And I, you know, we were talking about this a second ago, but you and me are kind of the, you know, some of the few people that have listened to every single one of these episodes and in some cases taken, you know, in most cases, actually the vast majority of cases, taken notes on them and dissected them. And so I felt what better person to kind of come on here and talk with me about some of the standout kind of ones from the whole archive.
Sweet. Yeah. I do. I can confirm that is true. Yes. That I've listened to all of them up to this point and, yeah, multiple times, a lot of them as well.
Yeah.
We kind of discussed, so I picked out 10 from the pile.
Okay.
Of the very large pile at this point. that I thought maybe listeners who at least hopped on, say, within the last year might not have been aware of. Some that are sort of, some that are kind of will be expected, and then some that I don't think really come up as much, things of that nature. So I don't know how you want to do this or what you'd like to focus on first, or if you want to go over with me, if you have some that you wanted to pick out, or what do you want to do here, sir?
Well, I'm going to go off your list, but before we do, did you, like, knowing me and the lack of dedication to projects that seem to happen in my life, do you ever think that 300 would happen for this thing?
I know why you're saying what you're saying, being completely truthful, and because you just put me on the spot, for listeners who don't, to break the fourth wall, I was not privy that that question was going to come up. Not really, like, I'm not really surprised, to be honest, no. Because when I first started listening to me, it was very clear that it was something that could last, you know, in terms of like the general premise of the show works, in the sense that obviously your interest is very high in this, and it's just a matter of getting the guests, essentially. And so the only ever period where I maybe thought, the only time I ever thought maybe it wouldn't go this long was when it seemed like there was dry spell, knowing you personally, I've talked to you about this, like dry spells of like when you weren't sure what guests were coming up or something of that nature, but yeah, not for interest wise. I thought for sure there's, you know, there's still, you could go 1,000 easy.
I think Tristan coming on board was like a real game changer in the last few years, where it took a lot of that burden off me of trying to figure out who to have come on each and every week. And now Tristan does it. So yeah, the show changed at that point, because yeah, you'd be hearing, I'm like, who can I call, Chris? Like, who can I have on the show that we know?
At this point? there was a few stretches in time early on where that seemed to be the case. But again, I mean, the luxury that obviously you have, and you know, not only just from doing the show, but from being a touring musician in a band, like, you've already had a lot of interactions with a lot of different people. So there's a bit of an in there, obviously, but yeah, no, I am serious in saying, though, I never really questioned the idea that it could be a long running thing, though.
Well, I appreciate you having faith in me where I didn't have faith in myself, but let's go back to, the list. Where do you want to start? I guess from 10.
Yeah, I'm going to start early. My list kind of, admittedly, I'm going to sort of bury the lead, I guess, is my list doesn't go past, the last 100, and it's not because I don't want to, but it's because I tried to keep it to 10.
Okay.
And so it's difficult to, you know, there's a lot. I could easily have made a list of 30, but it's just way too much time for this segment. So anyway, I'm starting off early on with episode 6, which is an episode that gets brought up semi-frequently, and it's Stephen McDonald. And it's probably to this day, I'm trying to think now as I say this, but I believe I'm accurate in saying it's probably still top three, if not the top most entertaining interview on the whole of the show to this point.
Yeah, no, I think he is, you know, like, as we say on that episode, like, his life should be a movie, because
yeah,
no one like the kid punk rock star, like, he was, and there's been a few, like, he was the most obviously successful of all of them. Like, we're not really talking about Old Skull in the same regard.
Or, yes.
You know, course. Like, you know, these other bands that had, like, Mad Society, I think, is another band that had, like, a young kid.
Or, like, you know, even you know, like a Harley Flanagan or something, which equally has a compelling life. But, yeah.
Yeah, Harley Flanagan definitely has a compelling life, too. But, like, Steve's life is compelling in, like, a different sort of way, that here he is, you know, in like a superstar rock band at the time he's like 11. And then by the time he's 12 in the episode, he details. Anyway, you should, yes, that episode 100%. We recorded that episode twice. First time we recorded it, we're in the hotel room at Vice. What was that? Vice 20. I think it was the party. And they had this huge show across, set up in New York, where we were going to go down there. And we had this incredible band that they put together for us. And we were going to do a hardcore medley. And so we came back from practice one night after smoking some pot and recorded this incredible episode where he just blew my mind with story after story. And then he's like, let's go and smoke another joint. And I'm like, okay. And I didn't plug my computer in and it died and we lost the whole episode. That's the first of maybe four epic losses that I've had on this show, but he was great. He's like, okay, we'll do it again tomorrow. And we did it again the next night.
That's great.
Yeah. And it's almost the exact same. He left out a couple of details as far as I remember on maybe the last Courtney Love story and things like that, but it's pretty much the exact same episode. And it's, yeah, one of the greatest hangs ever. One of the coolest people ever, you know, like member of the Melvins, member of Red Cross still, and just, yeah, like the coolest person in the room. I think that also having him on the show and having Gerard too on the show, I think early on as well, made it like kind of like all right for people like John Spencer and those types of people to be on the show. Cause he's like cool to them.
Yes. Agreed. And if you don't mind me doing the segue, it's funny you just said that, because the next on my list is number 33, the episode John Spencer, coincidentally.
Really? That is a surprising one. I remember that one. I got to go back and re-listen to that one. I remember that one at the time not going as smoothly as I would have liked. And I think if I go back and look, you know, Colin Brunton, I didn't really know either. But like for the most part, I'd had people that I was like friends with already on. Mm-hmm. And he was one of the first people that I didn't really know. Like it was kind of like set up like, oh, I just want to interview John Spencer. And yeah, I got to go back and re-listen. We did it at my brother's apartment. And Jay was definitely the most awkward. But I remember the John Spencer one.
Well, I will say, like, yeah, I do think you're not off. Again, I haven't listened to it in a while, but I remember being very pleased. Apart from just being a fan of John Spencer's work, I think what I liked is, especially in hindsight, it's in person, which I think is cool. And it doesn't, it listening to it, it's interesting from a listening perspective, because again, like you said, you're not necessarily pals. So it's not like a contentious episode by any means, but it's very, I don't know, maybe I just haven't seeked out enough interviews with him or whatever, but I found it very interesting. It's brief, it's interesting, mm-hmm. and it has enough info. And I think it's, you are having to maybe freestyle a little differently than a lot of other interviews you did. And I think it just works for whatever reason.
Yeah, there's definitely, I remember at one point bringing up Johan Kugelberg to him and he's like, oh, you like that guy? And I'm like, I get.
See, but that's exactly right. And it's you know, again, you know, these are guests whose, you know, the weight of their work I feel to be important, but also I feel the interviews themselves perhaps yield things that are interesting. Like, of course, Steve McDonald's has just a ton of sensational things in it. John Spencer's less so, but it's very interesting nonetheless. And again, I think it just works in the, you know, within the list of all the people you've had, it's just a really interesting get that early on.
No, he was definitely, you know, very cool to come on the show. And you know, once again, as you say, like, it's before I really figured out what I was doing in any sort of real way. So, you know, I'm sure it's, yeah, I got to go back and listen. I'd love to do a part two with him at some point, because that's someone who, sure. There's just so much more to talk about and like stuff mm-hmm. that got left out there. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he'd be up for it.
We'll see. Maybe one day.
I feel like if I was going to go and pick like a run of episodes that just like I look back upon like really fondly, it's kind of like, you know, it's starting right around, you know, right around there. But like I certainly a little bit later, like 42 with Fat Mike to, you know, like 40, I don't know, 49 with Jason.
Yeah, you're. When I looked at the list earlier, you start to really get in your stride around then, I feel like.
Yeah, like it felt like at that point, like those were just so many fun conversations and so many like good memories. That's the thing about this also is like, we're talking about this a little bit off air, but like I remember all these interviews, like where I was when mm-hmm. they happened, especially the ones where I was doing them in person. Now that I'm doing them all at my house, the memories aren't quite as vivid, but. You know, when I was traveling around doing the podcast in person, like, oh, some of my, you know, favorite memories, you know?
For sure.
We'll get to it later on, but like some of my favorite memories ever in my life are when you and me start doing stuff for the podcast a little bit later on.
Yes.
We'll get there.
Yeah. So next on my list, which is the third selection, is episode 37 with Michael Alago.
Yes.
Another heavy, heavy hitter. Very interesting stories within it. And of course, Michael himself, just a very charismatic guy. And I think the interview between you two is great. I think you have great chemistry also. It's just, great, great one.
He was so cool. You know, like meeting him was just, he came up to me at a fucked up show. And I was just like, holy fuck, you're the coolest person ever. And then having him on the show and just like peeling back these layers, like layer after layer of this guy being like this sort of like agent of culture in New York and just popping up in different places. And yeah, his stories, you know, like someone who has like stories for days and stories that he told me off air that put like, you know, were just mind blowing, like the stories just did not stop that day.
Yeah.
We walked all around New York that day and hung out, and yeah, one of my favorite people, like just certainly someone that, you know, getting to talk to him on the show like this, like, you know, I'm glad I had these kind of forums to have these conversations with people, because, you know, meeting these people, it's just not socially acceptable to punish them in the way I want to.
Yes. But yeah, anyway, I think that's great. And I think if, you know, certainly I think longtime listeners or deep head listeners will know why he's on the list, but it's for those who aren't really, it's a great one.
Yeah, a lot of good stories, dead boy stories, and like, mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's one of those people that you can connect a lot of dots through him. Like, that's the other thing I love about, you know, is thinking back on these episodes, is that all these episodes connect up in some way, and all these people are connected to one another through different people. And Michael's one of those people that just connects a lot of these people himself, you know, and like just other random people that I know in my life. Like, he signed Chris Jericho to his first record contract.
Wow. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. Like, he just is, he's, you know, been involved in so much weird shit.
Yeah. That's cool. So on to the next, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Switching gears a little, but this is great for a different reason. This is when we start to get, for me anyway, into sort of the underbelly stories or what have you. And it's funny because all these are the first 50, but number 50 episode, Joey Cape from Lagwagon. For two reasons I put this on the list. It has one of my favorite G.G. Allin stories, which is a trend as the show goes on, of people saying different G.G. Allin stories that are unfamiliar to a lot of people, I would assume. Not that G.G. Allin is, but these stories that aren't
personal old run-ins with G.G. Allin.
Exactly.
You know, yeah, the interactions with him. Yeah, I find that, you know, like Ian MacKaye and G.G. Allin are these two figures that seem to loom large throughout the history of punk rock.
Yeah. But anyway, that's great for that reason. And also Joey, of course, is a member of Lagwagon, and I like Lagwagon just fine, but I just never expected, you know, a member of Lagwagon's episode to have the impact that it did upon listening. And I was very floored, and it's a great one. If I remember too, it's fairly brief as well.
Yeah. It's a half hour. We recorded it live at the Horseshoe, and we were recording it in between opening acts and didn't have a lot of time. And he's someone I got to have back on, 'cause I've seen him a couple times since then. And it's always like, what up, man? Like, great to see you. Like, and I'd run into him for years before that, and just never talked, but now, you know, we broke the ice. So I got to have him back on. Like, that's the other thing, is it's such a weird thing to kind of be doing this show and having it have one direction in your mind, and then just having it go a completely different way just by the nature of, you know, doing a weekly podcast. But like, I much more envisioned, you know, having these part twos with these people. But here we are 5 years in, and Joey Cape has not been back for a part two. Mm-hmm. But he needs to be. But it's just because there's so many more people out there that I want to talk to, not more, but just that are like, I haven't talked to you yet. And I feel like, okay, well, I don't know. It's just, it's difficult to kind of like, I say this all the time, but this thing could happen every day. Like, I could be talking to people every single fucking day. Mm-hmm. And sadly, I don't think the world needs that.
Maybe not. But
I know you, Chris, would probably give up on listening to every single episode at that point, but you know, I could do it. there is enough people out there to talk about this thing.
Yes, for sure. But yeah, so that one as well. The next one, again, which is three episodes later, is Brian Venable. Is that how you say it? Venable or is it Venerable? Yeah. Venable.
Venable, yeah.
And a member, again, a couple reasons why, and Damien full well knows, but for listeners who don't, it's another one of our, you know, sort of deep head obsessions with Damien and I, which is sort of the hardline scene and the bizarre scene of straight edge in the 90s. And yeah, his episode is like absolutely classic with descriptions of that scene, which again is not something I ever would have anticipated because he's more known now as a member of Lucero, I believe it is.
Yeah, no, Lucero's his band, and Lucero's huge, right? Like how this episode came about, because I got an email to the email address early on when I was still like checking the emails and kind of just going off the before, you know, I started getting a lot of emails and Tristan started doing it. But, you know, and I got an email from a guy that was like, hey, Brian from Lucero used to or sang backups on the Raid record. I think, you know, I think they said was a member of Raid.
Mm-hmm.
In the email. And so Brian Schwartz, who's my manager and also Lucero's manager, I hit him up immediately and I'm like, yo, is this thing fucking true? Like, if this is true, you got to put me in touch with this dude. And then Brian Schwartz, my manager, sends me a text back and it's just of Brian from Lucero's calf tattoo, which is just the two crossed judge hammers. And he's like,
incredible.
Yeah, he says he sang in the Raid crew and was part of sang on the Raid record and was part of their crew.
Wow.
And I'm like, holy fuck, I gotta interview him. And he's like, okay, well, he's coming through town in a couple weeks, and yeah, I'll set it up. And then going down there and having like just being like, holy fuck, like, where is this thing gonna go? Like, what's this guy gonna be like? How open is he gonna be about talking about this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how deep does he go? Like, did he leave this thing, you know, and just,
yeah,
you know, turn his back on stuff, you know, like we're like, you know, I had no idea what it was going to be like. And then going in, first of all, Brian's cool as shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then second of all, like, yeah, the Raid stories are ridiculous, but third, like, he's just like, not only is he still like involved in punk, but that might also be one of the, no, that's not true. The episode with Tony Erba is definitely an error, but that's one of the early episodes with like heavy smack talk.
That's right. I, you know what's funny, even me saying that, I forgot, I know what you're saying now, but I had forgotten about that until this very moment.
Yeah,
but yeah, you're right, it does have that. He's very, very candid in it, which again is, I think, from a you know, a listener standpoint of someone who again doesn't know a lot even to this day about Lucero, or certainly his involvement in all of the stuff that comes up in the episode, it was very interesting to hear.
Yeah. And then right after, Ryan Penagos, Marvel Comics, Agent M, is now the VP of Marvel Comics.
Mm-hmm.
So come on, turn out a punk. You know, you become part of a power player in the entertainment industry. It just happens.
Yeah.
But anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off if you wanted any more.
No, no worries. I just think that's my number five, number six.
That's our only hardline person we've had on, by the way, so far. So
yes,
you know, hopefully we get more. I'm working on it.
Yes. So episode six on my list of 10 is episode 114, and it is the Live in Philadelphia episode, of which we did on our tour, your tour that I was on, I guess I should say.
Yeah, but, it was our tour. Yeah. It was definitely, yeah. It was our tour. It was, one of the best road trips of my fucking life. I had so great. Much fun doing it. Every day we'd wake up and just like nerd out about punk all day, and like we were booking on the fly, and you know, luckily friends came through and helped us put stuff together. But yeah, that was a fun one.
Yeah, the Philly one, I just think, like, one, we speak about that trip a lot, you know, so listeners obviously know of that, I would assume. And if not, even that, just that's a great cross section of guests with wild stories And some of which you don't really hear a lot from. So I think it's I just think it's a great episode, even just for the live one, just for the people that are on it.
Yeah, no, that one is especially. We had good mixes, I think, every single night of people.
Yep.
But that night in particular, we had a potent blend of Philadelphia punk rock celebrities. And Philly Boy Roy called in.
Exactly, right? It checks so many boxes. That's why I had to shout that one out.
Yeah.
The next one is another classic, but for a completely different reason. And someone I feel like, although they are a legend without question, I feel like they're almost low-key, which to maybe some people is going to seem absurd based on the name I'm about to say, but and I've still yet to read his book, but he came on around the time when it was released. But episode 135, Roger Murray of the infamous Agnostic Front and many other projects. But I just think like he is one of these people who for me is like becoming, I mean, he's arguably already is, but he's becoming like a, almost like this really, I don't know, like an elder statesman that's very, very, like he would not have been the person that like, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, even 20 years ago that I said, like, this will be the guy in 20 years that I think is going to be the greatest example of like, you know, a representative of like early 80s New York or late 70s New York or whatever you want to say. And I think he's done a really good job of, you know, talking about his life in a way that doesn't come off grandiose and doesn't, I don't know. He seems to be very himself without being very try hard or any of that nonsense.
Yeah, like he was, you know, he's someone that obviously you have preconceived notions with growing up as a fan of hardcore just because he's a legend, like you said. And yeah, like talking to him and, you know, as you're saying, his presence on social media, just like realizing like, oh, this dude's like just like a hardcore head. Mm-hmm. And like he collects records and goes deep on stuff and cares about this music. Like it wasn't just, you know, music of opportunity, which it seems like it is sometimes with people. For him, it's something that he goes deep with and is still learning about and still like rabid about.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And he, like, it goes without saying, but it's kind of obvious time and place that he would have access, but he is a mega record collector as well.
No, and, beyond. Yeah.
I just like when, like, you know, so to speak, like my heroes are sort of cut in the mold that I think I've become a part of. And it's like, it's nice to see that lineage, if you will.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it was one of those ones that I was really, you know, there's like so many conversations I got to have with people that I'd never really met in real life. And yeah, it was, you know, that was one that was really special to me.
Yeah. It's a good one. You did a great job too. I've heard him on a few other things.
Buddy,
that was great. Next one again, switching gears for listeners. So episode 178, I've talked about it before, certainly, and shouted it out. I think this is one of my favorite, might be my favorite of the whole show, the whole run of the shows. I think this is probably the most low-key, deep head hitter episode, and it's David Pajo. And again, completely an episode I would never have expected to be sort of knocked on my ass from, but I really was. And I to this day think maybe it has the greatest, very human, what's the word? Like observation and analysis of like what Danzig the human being is like and or was like. Mm-hmm. And I mean that very complimentary. And I say that as someone who I think publicly at this point, most people know that that's not like my favorite thing in the world, but David basically like listening to that makes me want to go like listen to Samhain or the Misfits or something. So yeah.
Yeah. Like he is super cool. Like just someone who's just like beyond awesome and getting him. I met him, like I talked about this in the intro to that episode, but like I had met him briefly backstage at a show and was talking to him about the CDs that he was playing that night. And he was super, oh, he did a Misfits cover that night even, I think. And he was just like super down with punk rock. But then, you know, upon researching and reading about his like history in it, being like, oh no, this dude's like a total like hardcore kid. And having that confirmed and just being like, man, I don't know, just to be able to bring Slint into the fold. So, so concretely was very validating.
Yeah, I agree. And again, I think it's like, just speaking for myself, like my perception of Slint, or at least the, you know, the people who are responsible for that project, I would have never placed as like, you know, giant Misfits fans, let's say. And so yeah. It's just even that kind of thing is the kind of the weird intersection that I like that you get on the show a lot.
He also drops the little nugget about Bonnie Prince Billy apparently knowing every single lyric to every single Misfits and every single Ramones song ever.
Yep. There's little teasers in it too. That's great. But I'm still
also directly. Connects to the Dwid episode too.
Yes,
that, which is a wild connection.
Exactly. And also, I'm going to go out on a limb right now and say that I believe David Pajo to be the biggest Misfits fan in the world. Pardon my tongue twister.
Yeah, that's definitely like a curse that you don't know if you want to bestow on any one person. But you're right. That is definitely, he is someone who, I don't know, the way he talks about them and also the fact that he's, you know, covered them. It's just, yeah, you know, you got a point. He was offered the gig too, right?
Mm-hmm. Which is wild. That whole, yeah, it's just great. But listeners who have not heard that, please very much to listen to that immediately.
That episode and the Brian Baker episode give you a really cool little history of Sam Hain, and that, you know, it's very interesting to hear between those two episodes.
Yep, agreed. That's a great shout out. Next episode on my list, another legend. Again, in this episode, it's, I would say every 10 seconds, there's something to learn or a jaw-dropping story or anything like that. It's entertaining throughout the whole way, and it's just completely thick with any and all things relevant to the show. And it's episode 192, Thurston Moore.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, I don't know. I was super nervous about that one. I had no idea it was going to go. Thurston and I have a tumultuous history. No, I'm just kidding. It's been pretty awesome for a long time, but that's my gateway, man. Thurston was the guy that got me into punk through Sonic Youth, and definitely through like shouting out all the shit that he shouts out. So yeah, I felt, and I also felt like he enjoyed it, which was,
yeah,
was really cool. Like knowing that, like we came out of that being like, I think he had a good time.
Well, and I think like, again, the episode, it's 192. So just shy of 200, and you know, your run up to that point, right? I think it's starting to, at least in my view, I believe you're starting to really like, you know, get through to people in the sense of like what you're doing. I think like folks like him who come on, they get it, right? Like, and when you have that understanding, it goes really well. And I think in this case, it really, really did.
Yeah. There's no way he hadn't listened to the Gerard Cosloy episode or something, you know?
Like, yeah. And I mean, I don't even know, you know, I'm not saying he's listened to every episode, but I just just like, there's no way you can't, you know, be aware. Well, you can be unaware, but it's very unlikely, I would think, that someone of his, you know, deep understanding of this would be completely unaware of what you're doing and who's been on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially considering how many of his friends you've had on, let's say.
Yeah. And I just think even like people that check it out before they come on and do it themselves, you know, I find there's always a little bit of that, like, you know, I just listened to this episode because, you know, I just want to see what it was like before I came on. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't dip into like someone that he knew just to see what they said about punk rock. Because once again, he's a deep head. Like, you know, like I think him and Roger are very similar in the sense that they both seem like they're still kind of like engaged with the act of like trying to learn about this thing.
Yep, agreed. And number 10 is episode 206, not far from that, and it's switching gears completely. And again, it's great because I've never heard an interview like you did with this person, and I think it's great on all levels. But it's Johnny Marr of the infamous Smiths, of course, and other projects. But I think it's great because it pulls in people who probably are just listening for Johnny Marr, who may have checked it out, but you understand very quickly that he is like very, very cool and very, very down, down early. And that was kind of surprising to how down he is to me.
Yeah. He's like another, you know, and I keep ticking them off the box, but that's when I decided I wanted to become a Manchester punk rock guitar collector, you know, just like the getting all these great guitar players that played in all these legendary bands from Manchester that, you know, all kind of came out of the same scene. You know, like that's when he kind of reveals that him and Billy Duffy grew up together. And yeah, like it was awesome. And then, you know, one of the great bands that I think, you know, that we discovered on this show, but certainly a band that we like to talk about a lot on this show is the Sister Ray band that he played one show with. That's, my God, if you have not checked out Sister Ray Suicide, it is, and it's very hard to search because the Suicide song or Suicide cover of Sister Ray comes up. So if you look Suicide by Sister Ray up on YouTube, picture young Johnny Marr playing with that. It's like, no wonder he didn't give a shit about playing in the Smiths later on. He was like, I already played in the greatest rock and roll band ever from Manchester.
But yeah, that's my 10 there. I think it's a well-rounded 10. There's, you know,
no, I definitely like it. It was fun going back, listening to that with you and looking at those, because there are, you know, I feel the same way about these episodes that I do about my record collection, where there's like, they're all my babies, you know, like there's there's a couple episodes, like there's definitely a couple episodes that were a little rough, you know. I just realized John Joseph came back for a part two. Totally forgot. He's like buried on the tail end of the Matt Freeman episode.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I knew. I recall that vividly. Yeah.
And then also the Craig Satari, Fletcher from Pennywise episode is also buried on the tail end of, I'm trying to remember, Dan Panic's episode, not Dan Panic, someone from Screeching Weasel's episode, Jughead.
Yeah, I can't. Jughead's been, yeah, I can't. I remember it, but I couldn't remember which. But yeah,
yeah. But this, Chris, has been a incredible ride. Thank you for riding with me for the last 5 years, doing footnotes with me, off air in the very beginning, and then of course on air for all these years. And yeah, like you are really, you know, one of my closest confidants on this thing, and I appreciate your ear.
Hey man, well, I appreciate you doing it, and I enjoy it as much as it's often a lot of work some weeks, depending on the guest as far as research is concerned.
Speaking of that, on to one of those footnotes.
Yep.
Well, if you're hearing this, you have made it through the monolith that was episode 300. Lauren,
you get a prize.
You get, Lauren.
Very long.
Yeah. Lauren listened to the entire thing right here beside me. She did not move for 3 hours. Like, I thought she was in a trance. I had to check a pulse at one point. You know, she had her eyes closed, but I think that was just to concentrate a little bit more on the punk stuff that we were talking about.
Totally.
You'll be back for an episode, though, one day, right?
Definitely. Yeah. I have promised Damien that one day I will do the episode, considering that punk has had a huge part in our lives, and that is how we met. And, you know, 17 years and 3 kids later, it is time at some point to play tribute, but not today.
Well, until that day, thank you for coming here on episode 300.
It's my pleasure. I'm going to go check if those kids are asleep.
Okay, Lauren's going to go check if the kids are asleep. I'm just going to wrap up by saying thank you so much to, of course, Danko Jones and Nick Flanagan. We have been talking. We're going to start doing a monthly podcast together. So if you enjoyed that very long conversation, don't worry. There's more to come. And also thank you to Jay Maskus, Fred Armisen, both of you. I love both of you very much. Thank you for your support of this show. Chris O'Toole, this thing would not be possible without you, buddy. You were the original believer in this thing, and you are my co-host for Footnotes, and I love you dearly. Tristan Abraham, thank you for all the hard work you do. You're my brother. You're the booker. You're the booker man. You're the booker man. Thank you for what you do for this show. Thank you also to Brian Schwartz, Amy Adams, and Kim Ross for all they've done for this show as well over the years, and helping me keep it on the rails, and Vans and Brook at Vans, and all the people at Vans that support this thing. And I feel like there's an Oscar speech. I'm just running through all the names that I can remember right now. My family. I got to thank my family. I got to thank Audio Boom, even though my fees keep going up. But thanks, guys. Thank you for that. I got to thank Rode. Rode gave me this microphone way back when. And yeah, like really, if they didn't give me this microphone, Rode Podcaster, that's what I use. If anyone wants to know, Rode Podcaster and GarageBand, and you can do this too. It's easy shit. Easy shit. That's it. I'm trying to remember who else I got to thank. Who else I have to give it up for. And of course, Corey Harris. And once again, to hear more about Mother 13, head over to Sharpling and Worcester. And this show would not be happening without the influence of Sharpling and Worcester, without the influence of Wei Ting and John Pollock over there post-wrestling, without the influence of Colt Cabana and Colt Cabana's fantastic podcast as well, Danko Jones and his podcast. And yeah, I owe a lot of people a lot of thanks. And I, you know, patrons, all the patrons, holy shit, thank you to the patrons. And all you that listen, even if you just listen to like one episode, even if you just duck in and hear Brian Baker and then you duck out for another 12 months, that's fine. I appreciate you coming in and listening, whatever brought you here. Remember, as always, Black Lives Matter. The lives of Indigenous people matter. We need to protect trans kids. We need to protect trans people. Go out there, get informed, sign your petitions, show up, do whatever you can to get involved. Fuck fascism. Smash that shit. Go out there, make your own culture. It helps. It'll help your mental health. It'll help your mental state. And sign your organ donor cards, because by the time they come looking for those organs, you're not going to need them anymore. So why don't you sign that card and help someone else get through. Wear a mask. And that's it. Thank you, everyone, for supporting and believing in this thing. We got lots more to come. It's just we're keeping the fun times going. It's not letting up. Thank you, everyone. Love you. See you next time.